What up, Donut Squad, and welcome to
Holy Matrimony, a podcast where we have the whole conversation about the humor,
holiness,
and hardships of marriage.
My name is Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Anna Glaze.
And we are that Catholic couple. And today's episode is with the Brody, and I guess the sister?
I don't know. The new sissy.
Yeah, the new sissy. With Ike and Mallory Ndolo. I've known Ike for a long, long, long time, and I think we get into that in the episode, but this is a really fun episode.
Yeah, it was so great to finally meet Mallory as well, because we've known Ike for a while, but it was so good to see his new wife.
I know, him as a married man.
Yeah. To the outside world, I was like, oh my gosh, he's married already. This is awesome. But anyway, we talk about race. We talk about creating together. We talk about
interracial couples
and what that feels like. So we really hope you like the episode. Enjoy.
Can I say EK instead?
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Nice. You can use EK.
Is that the proper pronunciation?
No, not really. I mean,
okay.
if I lived in Nigeria, there's like a higher chance that I would have been called EK my whole life.
Gotcha.
Or just by my full name, Chidike. But you know, being in America, Ike was just always the easier.
Yeah.
Because the reason I ask is I remember your brother calling you that. And I was like, oh, that makes sense.
He goes through a range of nicknames. Chidi. Okay.
Chidi.
Is
that become popular now?
Chidi's the one that, Kimmy uses the most now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nobody else really uses it.
Well, because you know that's the character on The Good Place, right?
On The Good Place,
okay. Yeah, I figured that.
Yeah, but he was using it way before The Good Place was popular.
Hipster.
So hipster. That's so funny. Okay,
and
so
it's funny because he's not even Nigerian.
No, he's from Ghana.
Oh, yeah.
But they actually, on the last episode, they acknowledged, you know, Tahani's sister?
Yeah.
She said, are you
we're
you
guys watching? Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, we love
her. Tahani's sister, she looks at Chidi's like, your name means God is present in Igbo. And I was like, okay. They like fully
acknowledged it.
Nice.
That's sick.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Okay, speaking of the correct pronunciation, how about we give them a chance to introduce themselves?
Yes.
Let's do that.
So tell us who you are.
Yes.
Done.
I'm Mallory. There it is.
you can tell us if you want to tell us like what you do. We don't like force it because some people might want to be private about it, but like
no, literally, I mean, tell us everything starting from birth. Start from conception.
Social security, blood type, everything.
Conception.
Yeah. Okay, you got it. That's easy. So I'm Mallory. I grew up in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And then I lived there my whole life, went to college at University of the Incarnate Word in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So,
okay.
Went there for 4 years, graduated, lived in San Antonio for 4 more years, and then moved to Phoenix. So.
When were those 4 years?
That I was in San Antonio?
Yeah.
I was in college 2006 to 2010.
Okay.
Okay.
And then you lived there 4 years after that?
2010. And then I was there 4 years after, yeah.
We were in San Antonio at the same time.
At least the tail, her tail end, yeah.
That's funny. I worked at St. Mark the Evangelist in Stone Oak.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but yeah, like I worked there for 2 years.
Is she the second incarnate word we have? Was Aaron? Aaron
no, she went to Texas State.
Oh, she did. Yes. Yes, she did.
For a hot minute. And then she went to UTSA.
And then she went.
Sorry, we've been learning a lot about other friends couples that we have that like were in the same area that we were and we didn't know.
Yeah, that is shocking. That's really shocking. I love San Antonio, though. I miss it. It was really fun.
That's awesome.
Speaking of Mexican stuff, there's a lot of Mexican, great Mexican food, great Mexican culture there.
Oh, yeah.
In San Antonio, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
So it's a great place to be.
It is, and I think that's why I like San Antonio, because I grew up in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Nice.
Which
that makes sense.
Very it's very similar. So it felt like home to me. So Phoenix is more of a cultural shock to me.
It's very white.
Like, what is this?
That's so true.
But yeah, so I work with kids with autism. I'm a behavior analyst. So that's me. I have an early intervention clinic that's partnered with St. Dominic Savio Academy, which is a school for kids with autism.
Oh, wow.
That's badass.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Oh, my gosh, it's amazing.
That's really cool.
Anna, what do you do? Yeah. Can you help people, please?
I don't know.
I'm joking. You'll learn that this is just me roasting people. It's a kind of my podcast niche.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But it's because I love you guys. Just letting you know. All three of you.
It's your love language. I like
really
that.
It really is.
Yes, it is. Okay, and who's the second person on the podcast? Or the other person?
My name is Ike Ndolo, and I am from Missouri, and I live in Phoenix currently, and I play music and I write songs, and I'm married to a badass.
Yeah, you are. Yep. High five across the internet. Nice. I like how you positioned his hand to where my hand was on the screen. That's so good. Okay, so I want to start off with just a quick question. I hope, Ike, you remember this. If not, go ahead. You can improvise and we'll act like it was the real answer. Okay, so I've known Ike. I think we decided it was 12 years now.
Yes.
Around 12 years.
Ike has known you longer, well, far longer than I have ever known you.
Yes.
Really? You dated him first.
Correct.
That's true for you and a lot of people.
It's true.
Yeah.
Daniel
was accepted into our family, like, unit. Like, I mean, really was. Like.
Was? Oh, man.
I'm talking, like, in the past tense.
When it,
like,
happened, yeah, I know.
You were quickly assimilated as a little brother.
Yeah.
And it started. You want me to tell?
Yes,
say
okay.
That?
So the question was, during the Blessed Is She retreat where my wife helped volunteer, she told me about a conversation that you had that I've never heard before, which is your first initial thoughts of me when you met me when I was like a junior or senior in high school, which I was a lot skinnier and a lot smaller and a lot less hairy then.
lankier and shorter, less hair.
You were very, 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 you were just a such small kid.
I really was.
It's funny because, like, I feel like most people that time of their lives, they don't change a ton, but you have changed so much.
Puberty came in hard.
Yo, no, legit though. I grew like 6 inches and gained like 90 pounds over a summer. Straight
yes.
up.
Yes.
Legit. Like, the next time he saw me, he was like, who are you?
What the heck?
I think I remember the next time I saw you in person, I was like, what the hell? Like, you're not.
Yeah, you can cuss on this podcast. You're good.
You're good.
Cool.
Yeah.
So my first impression, I don't remember what I said at Blessed Is She, but I'll just go ahead and say what I think. What I'm thinking now is, I just remember thinking, like, here's this, like, small kid, but you were so dope. Like, seriously,
he has a greedy cat smile right now.
Like, the fact that you could, like, because Daniel can dance. Like, he like, had straight up rhythm.
Nice.
And he was on the step team. I was like, white nice. Chocolate. Like, this white. Kid.
Yeah, he remembers.
That's a compliment.
I'm about
that's
to cry.
Real.
This is so loving. I love it. Well, because my nickname in high school was White Chocolate, and all of my youth group friends called me White Chocolate. Mm-hmm. And they were like, and Ike and Kemi were like, Kemi's his brother, if y'all don't know who he is on the podcast. And they were like, wait, why are they calling you White Chocolate? I was like, let me show you.
It's a thing.
Let me show you why. And then you, like, hit some step moves. I'm like, okay.
Is that where I earned my black card?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, we can't just be handing them out anymore,
actually,
you know? Like, with the way things are right now, we gotta... We got those black cards, but
no, you really did. I mean, and then, like, it was like we would talk about you like little brother way, you know, like, and my brother's way better at me than keeping up with people. Like, my brother, you know, for people who my brother traveled and played bass for this guy named Matt Marr for years.
Who's that?
A little underground artist. Yeah, he's
Matt Maher.
Mayor.
Like the mayor of a city. I'm sorry. Yeah. The joke's dead. Stop. Okay, keep going.
Joke's dead. So anyway, Kimmy has always been really great about keeping contact with people, like, from afar. And so he was, like, always the one who's like, oh yeah, yeah, D Glaze is, like, doing this, is doing that. I'm like, oh yeah, 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 for sure. Dope, dope, dope. And then we'd, like, run into each other every once in a while. Anyway, but we always kind of talk. And then eventually, like, my sister got assumed into this. You know, like, where we would all just kind of talk about you in, like, this little brother way.
Well, I think it was because I moved to Houston eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I met
with
your sister, and she came to some Rockets game with me. And
yeah.
And so that That was sorry, Anna. You just keep like, the so headphones low. That we use are like strapping. Let me adjust the mic real quick, and we're good to go. Okay, cool.
Why is he so happy? It is really funny hearing these stories because I've heard them from you. I've heard them from like your family, but I always love hearing them from friends.
The actual source,
like the actual source.
Dana wasn't bullshitting this entire time.
Yeah, Dana wasn't just pretending sure, to be really Daniel. Cool. Yeah.
I just am really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I want to go from there. Actually, is there anything else you want to gloat about me?
I mean, listen, and this is the last thing is back to your shrimpiness from your shrimpiness to puberty hit you damn hard. You got a great beard. I'm low-key jealous of your beard.
It's gone through a couple phases. Partly because I didn't live near my barber, and as people with like good hair normally know, like you can't really go to somewhere that isn't your normal barber because they screw it up every time I went other than my normal barber.
Yeah.
It was the worst. It was always different. They messed up my lines. They made me look like a... Yeah. I mean, Mallory, you probably know if he goes to a bad barber.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It was like, what is wrong with your beard?
Well, and because I let it grow and because I didn't trust anybody like to mold it and to do its thing. And now we've got like a good length and the good lines. And thank you so much.
Okay, stop talking about yourself. Let's go back to our guests.
Literally make this entire podcast about me. I will say
my favorite. So I never really saw, like, I knew about your friendship with Ike when we started dating and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, who is this guy? No, I'm just kidding. It's like, I don't know who Ike is. No, I did, but I was like, oh, that's awesome that like you knew him, but I didn't know how close it was.
Yeah.
I thought Dana was just like kind of name dropping. Like, to be honest, I was like, okay, Dana, sure, you're friends with Ike, whatever. Until Rachel and David Leiniger's wedding, and y'all were killing it on the dance floor, and I was like, oh my gosh.
No.
They are like, you guys were literally in sync, which is funny because they were playing in sync songs sometimes, and I was like, okay guys, like you're reading each other's minds, you're like prepping for the next move together. It was so good.
I'll never forget whenever I walked over to Ike, I was like, Ike, the next song is gonna be This Is How We Do It, and he's like, oh what? And they played This Is How We Do It. It was amazing.
It was really funny. So that was my first glimpse into Daniel and Ike friendship. So
Ike was gonna say something.
Oh, I'm sorry, go. Was he?
Oh, it looks like you were.
Nope.
No.
Maybe I was, but I don't remember. So it was
fair enough. You know, that's how these podcasts go. Conversations. Yeah. What were you going to say? I'm sorry, Anna.
Well, no. So I've known the Dino and Ike friendship, and we've known Ike since then as a married couple for a little while. But I'm so excited to have Mallory on.
Yes, that's where I was going next.
Like, all of a sudden, you were married. Like,
actually, no. Not necessarily like all of a sudden. Yeah, I know Ike. He's very private, and I'm glad he is, because he's got a life that a lot of people try to do shit with.
I mean, like, try to invade.
Honestly,
him.
Like, they always try to, like, do stuff. It's like, why are you messing with Ike? And I'm happy he kind of kept it private until I was like, got a bride.
Yeah, he's like, he's married. Like, what the heck? This is amazing.
It's true. It's true.
So can you tell us that story?
Yeah, so we met. So Mallory mentioned that she... what she does, started a clinic for early intervention clinic for young kids with autism, and it's partnered with an academy for kids with autism, which is K through 12.
Yes, K through 12, which is actually actually the school technically owns the clinic, so it's all under one nonprofit, which is really cool and meaningful to me because it just means that we're always giving back to our people and our staff and our kids. But anyways, the founder, the starter of the nonprofit is Corinna Indolo, Kimmy, Ike's brother's wife. So I had moved to Phoenix and was still working at a clinic in Texas. So I was working remotely. So I did that for about a year, and that was just really challenging. So I was kind of looking around in Phoenix and had interviewed at a school downtown for kids with autism. And my aunt Chris, who goes to Our Lady of Mount Carmel, knew that I had interviewed, knew about Corinna and Kimmy, and thought that I had interviewed there. And that wasn't where I had interviewed. And so my aunt went up to Corinna and said, like, oh, yeah, my niece interviewed with you. Corinna had no idea who I was or who I was talking to. And so Now I lost my.
I'm so sorry.
I was trying to hear inside. I was like, what is he saying?
I know. I was because the computer that we record this on was getting hot. So I was like, give me a buck so I can lift it up to let the fan get air out. And you're like, what are we doing here?
I'm sorry.
So we were like, I don't know how you're trying to communicate that with your
That was
eyes.
A lot of words.
I'm
with
so sorry. No, I was just trying to say, hit me the book. And you're like, what's a book?
The pill bottle? What's right here? Like the mic.
She hands me the lamp. Like, what? No, that's not what I'm asking for. So I'm very sorry for that,
sorry,
Mallory.
Guys.
That was
sorry.
Not my intention.
Oh, dang it. I was like, there's nasal spray on my nightstand. I was like, the nasal spray? What do you want?
So we're sorry for interrupting.
Sorry.
Keep
Continue,
going.
Please. Sorry.
Okay, so my aunt just ran into Corinna at Our Lady of Mount Carmel and said, my niece interviewed with you, and it wasn't true. She had no idea who I was. Corinna had no idea who I was. So she told my aunt, like, no, we're not hiring another behavior analyst, but tell her to call me because I don't know. So I did. I called Corinna and ended up, we just hit it off. And so I started working there. And then she always had told me, you should date my brother-in-law who lived in Nashville at the time.
So I was living in Nashville and my brother told me about Mallory. I was dating someone else at the time. And so when he said that, I was like, well, I'm dating somebody. He's like, well, my brother in Kimmy fashion was like, well, I hope it doesn't work out.
Which is funny, too, because Kimmy had told me he was single.
Right.
Ah.
I was like, I talked to Kimmy about this guy. Kimmy told me he was single, and I haven't heard anything from him for months. So I guess he's just, maybe I'm not his type. That's what I thought.
Wow.
So I was like, huh.
So Kimmy almost sabotaged it from the very beginning.
Freaking Kimmy.
He almost.
Started it and almost sabotaged it. Equally.
That sounds very Kimmy-like.
Yeah, it was. And so I was, you know, like dating somebody and that somebody didn't work out. I was in Nashville. That was in May when we first met. Like we laid eyes on each other. I was doing a benefit concert for Corinna's school and Next Step.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I think Mallory had held the door open for me.
Yeah.
But I was like literally on my way to see
the door to your heart.
Yes.
And he was not interested.
I was dating somebody.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that makes sense.
Which now I respect, though.
Yeah, you know? I was dating somebody. So I did not have my head on the swivel.
No, he didn't.
And because this somebody lived, I'm not going to go into too many details.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Who cares? But I will say this. She lived very, 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 very far away. And I was going to go see her in that very far away place for the first time ever because it was long distance. Yeah. It did not go well. Spectacularly bad. And I was like, well, tried that. Didn't work. Fine, whatever. Came back to the States.
Move on to Mallory.
Move on.
So cute.
Move on. Move on to the real thing. No. Well, I got home.
I was a rebound, but I accept it.
I got home.
You said that so matter-of-factly. Sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting with a laugh. It. She's like, yeah, I'm a rebound.
But it's okay.
And I'm living it, you know?
I think my wife is. It's very matter-of-fact.
I love it. That's so good.
You were the rebound
data.
And...
Just needs data.
Yeah. You were the rebound in the final basket. So
yes.
You were it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
you're
right.
Right on the buzzer.
Nice.
There you go.
See? Yeah. I watch sports.
Final basket.
Yeah, there you
what
go.
Is
that?
That
was great.
I don't know.
I'm
last three pointer.
Sure I know what basket is, but it sounded perfect.
The buzzer.
Yeah,
buzzer.
It is.
Well, the buzzer.
Pointer.
We'll do that one.
The buzzer
yes.
basket.
No.
Buzzer basket.
Now you're just trolling me on purpose.
Yeah.
That's so good. Okay, so Mallory's the buzzer beater, and then what happens?
Yes. So yeah, so I that was like in May, and I got summer's a busy time for me, so I just kind of hopped into summer travel, and then I was back in Phoenix. I think I was just visiting. I think I was just visiting mm-hmm. my brother and fam, and I was back, and I had remembered about Mallory. So I did a little Facebook stalking.
Classic.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I like.
Did you just message her that? I like.
I text, all right. I went to Corinne. I'm like, hey, so Mallory, she's still single, da da da. And, you know, Corinne lit up. She's like, yeah. I'm like, so we got each other. Like, we got each other's number. She gave me Mallory's number on permission from Mallory. And then I called Mallory, like, the next day or something like that.
No, oh, no, a week later.
Damn.
It was within the same week.
Yes, I remember. So Corinna comes to me. She's like, hey, my brother-in-law's in town. He wants your number. Can I give it to him? And I was like, oh, yeah. She's like, really? Yeah. It's like, okay. So she did. And then I expected a phone call. I didn't get one for a week. So again, I'm like, this guy's just not that into me.
Within the week, it was the beginning of the week. And I literally,
Thursday.
I wanted to call her, but it was a nerve wracking thing. So I'm like, okay,
fair enough.
I'm going to call her.
Sure.
I'm nervous. Anyway, so I call. And on a Friday, thinking maybe she'll like, because I was in town for a little bit. So I was like, maybe she'll like want to go out next week or the next day or something like that. And so, but I think I just asked her like, hey, we played phone tag and then I called her and we're like, hey, you want to go out sometime? She's like, yeah, what about tonight? She actually made a joke. She made a joke, which was like so great.
It's not a good joke at all.
It's not, but it was like, you know, it's nice because.
Breaking the ice. Breaking the tension.
Breaking the Ike.
I was nervous. I was nervous, and you just sounded so cool as a cucumber. I was like, I was like, well, are you busy today? She's like, and you're like, nah, I'm like really, really busy. Okay, not that great, but still, in those moments, you were like, oh, I don't know. And she was just so cool about it. So calm and collected. I was like, okay, all right. So we went out that night, and I was in town for, what, a week and a half?
Yeah.
And we literally basically just started dating. Like, we went on one date, and we just never stopped dating.
Yeah, nice. The best story is that, so the first night we went out, it was just a great night. We talked all night, and then when he walked me to the car and was like, hey, tomorrow I have a dinner with some friends. Do you want to come? Just like right off the bat. And I was like, yeah, I'll come. Didn't know it was a Lord's Day dinner.
Oh, wow.
And that was something I had never really been exposed to.
I was just about to ask that because we went to school with St. Paul's Outreach, which like does like Lord's Day, that's their thing. And I remember going to my first one being like, what the hell are we at right now?
Why that's, how we- that's how I felt. I was...
Listen, can I just say my side?
Yeah.
I was so excited. And the funny thing is I wasn't even trying to be this like holy like, okay, let's go to adoration and then like a Lord's Day for date. I'm like, no. I just remember that I was having dinner with friends and I liked the shit out of this girl. Nice. And I was like, I just want to see her. I'm like, I'm having this. In my head, this is how I said it to her. My friends are having a dinner tomorrow. What are you doing? You want to come with me? That's how I looked kind of in my head because I was so excited to get it out.
So that's really cute.
It wasn't until later that I realized it was this awkward ass.
Oh my gosh.
The Lord's Day dinner actually wasn't that awkward. It was just the whole situation. He was singing with his guitar and I think I was singing next to him, which I don't know. Apparently I didn't want it to work out because I will never sing in front of anybody.
Oh, that's awesome.
But we just, I don't know.
You should hear her family sing happy birthday together.
Oh. That's good.
Just like all off key?
Literally, not off key, just 9 different keys. Oh.
They can't find a key.
Yeah,
I didn't know keys were a thing.
That's so good. That's so good.
I actually really love when she sings. And I asked her.
No.
I do.
Was she hopefully the one featured on her newest album?
She was on
yours.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was her.
No.
Yeah, so that was, and then, you know, then we went out like to a bar after that, but it was like one of those, I'd always ask my friends, cause I was, you know, I think amongst my friend group, I was definitely one of the last guys to get married.
Yeah.
And, but I would always ask people like, you know, like, okay, how did you know? And, one of the first, my original band, this guy named Mike Gizar was my drummer. I remember Jenna, you know, from Jenna's husband.
Yeah.
She, you know, one of my best friends, and like he met Jenna and then like proposed within months. And I was like, dude, how did you know? And he's like, I just knew. And like all my friends would say that, like, well, I just knew. And I just like, that's so stupid. Like, I don't, that doesn't make any sense. And it was that night I was like, oh, this is what they meant. And I was like, just sitting here looking at this woman. I'm like, oh, this is what they meant.
It's the realest thing, right?
It is real.
Like, it's, you think it's real. Bull. Like, yeah. When you first hear, like, oh my gosh, no, how did you actually know? Like, give me something tangible. And they're like, no, right. Like, bro, you just know.
Yeah.
Like, I knew the first, one of the first nights we were being us. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I was also dating someone, though. But we were, really? we were all going, and, like, it was like a group.
That's not when I knew, though. It was after that. Like, after you broke up. There was no overlap, remember?
No, I know there wasn't an overlap, but there was a moment. No, but there was a moment. And remember, we had a friend like group outing. We all went bowling, and my it was already towards like the end of our relationship anyway with my previous boyfriend. But like,
no, sure.
I remember him saying, like, we walked out of there, and my boyfriend even saying, like, you spent a lot of time with Dano. And I was like, what? And I didn't even click, but I was like, oh my gosh. We like laughed the entire time.
And
like,
remember what you did,
jokes
though, right?
Back and forth. Oh, I dragged myself across the,
like, Carlton did on the bloopers.
Yeah. I like dragged myself across the bowling alley.
And I'm the only one that got the reference.
A complete fool of myself. Yeah. And I was like, why am I acting this way? But like, Dano got it. And I was like, yes, you get the joke. It was so,
I love it.
It was really funny.
So good.
That's
so
awesome.
That is good. So you knew then, Daniel?
I knew there was something special here.
Yeah.
Like, it was still like, just friendship.
Yeah.
And I made sure of that.
I agree to that, too.
Well, I keep saying, like, I made sure of that. I never envisioned you like that because you were dating a friend of mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then y'all broke up, and then we had, like, we just stayed friends, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a point where I knew for sure. I was like, this is the woman I'm going to marry.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Love it.
That's awesome.
And I still respect it, too. Kind of like how Mallory was saying, like, Ike was saying, like, I was still respecting the person I was dating. So even when my boyfriend made that comment, I was like, how dare you? Like, that's not
right.
Even here. But I still remember, I agree with that. And like, I remember that there was like, oh, he was really cool. Like, there was like a really cool friendship there.
Like, yeah, kiss him on the mouth, you know?
No, no. not at that point. Not at that point. Later I did.
That's so funny. Okay, wait. So you realized she could be the one, and then what happened?
How long till y'all walked down that aisle?
What did you just say?
I don't know. I can't.
Yeah. I think he's going to talk about how when he proposed.
So I was in town for that week and a half, literally saw each other every single day. And we just kind of went hard in the paint. We're just like, okay. I think, for me, I was like, this is it. This is the deal.
Yeah.
And so that was September. Our first date was September 9th, 2016.
Yeah.
And so we got engaged on Mother's Day 2017 in May.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was what, like 7 months of dating?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is like, literally within the first month, we were like, yeah, let's just get married. We elope.
We talked about it a lot.
Let's just elope. Let's just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Journeying to that moment, it wasn't like journeying to engagement was not like an easy. It wasn't just like we weren't super starry eyed. I guess like we broke up for a day.
We did break up for one day.
Who did the breakup?
Who was the dumpy?
Me.
She broke up with me.
Wow. No, I was the dumper. Yeah,
you were the dumper.
I was the dumper. Yeah.
Nice.
Props. She dumped me.
And it was the best thing that happened.
It was, actually.
Nice.
So it's funny because we broke up and I'm like all mad, you know, like I left my sunglasses in her car.
On purpose?
And, you know, maybe subconsciously I did.
Nice.
That's a
good question.
I know it is. I remember thinking about it later, like, well, it's in her car and that's not bad. I don't hate that, you know. we broke up, so we're like talking about this thing that we just did, which is breaking up, and we went to some parking lot somewhere, I don't know where it was, just some restaurant, And we're talking through all these things and all these issues and all fears and all that stuff. And there was this car that parked. And this old man, older gentleman, probably in his like late upper 70s, gets out of the car goes around to the passenger side, opens the door, and carries out this woman who we assume was his wife. And literally it was
puts her in a wheelchair.
Puts her in a wheelchair and wheels her out. And I was like looking, we were both like talking.
Yeah.
And like there was like this natural pause in the conversation, and then that happened. So we're both watching this. Yeah. And I just started laughing.
Because it was Santa.
It was straight up, it was relationship Santa. He was just like, just gave us a little gift, you know. It was just,
yeah, that's so cool. Know,
it was really meaningful to both of us, just because like Ike said, we were talking a lot about our fears, and I think for me, I was caught in this place where, like for me, getting married was really freeing, because before I was married, I was just always wondering, like, who's it going to be? And is it going to be this person? And this person has some things I don't necessarily like. And is that okay? Is that not okay? It's just like so many questions and fears and concerns, yeah. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. You know, and I was older. I was 30, which is, you know, older for some couples. So when I met Ike, I kind of got stuck in that, like, okay, there's these things he does. And I don't know, you know, if I marry him, if those are going to, you know, be whatever. And they were all really stupid things, like really, really stupid things. Like he would eat popcorn and just his beard would be full of popcorn. And I wouldn't notice. Or, you know, I mean, every single time, literally
he's black, all of that stuff.
I didn't even notice it before.
I didn't even notice.
I was colorblind, you know.
I just don't see color, you know.
I don't see color.
That's so funny.
Oh my god!
He didn't even know she was white. Like it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. Right. Don't get into it.
There's a bunch of colorblind people.
Colorblind.
Everyone's just gray.
And so it's all these like funny things that like.
No, they were dumb things though. So I think when we were in that moment, it was like, okay, these things are stupid. These are not things that actually matter in life, and. Like losing him, losing the person that he is and like the heart that he has is infinitely worse than dealing with these silly things. And so I think too, like seeing that couple was just, it was like this reassurance, like it doesn't like, look, you know, like look at this man and taking care of his wife and they're just happy and it's okay.
That was the thing. They were happy. It wasn't like she was, it looked like it was like a temporary thing. Like she had like a cast on her foot or something like that. Like it was, like she was hurt, but like it was, but there was like joy, right? It seemed like they were like super joyful, like in the midst of their, you know, obviously her struggle. And I'm like, cause that was meaningful to me. Cause I'm looking at him like, that's what I want to be. Same. That's the kind of husband I've always wanted to be, is like, you know, to my last breath, I want to serve my wife, you know, like that's what I want to do.
Amen.
Yeah.
So, you know, us seeing that, I think it was just very, it was very meaningful. And you know, and I've, marriage on a practical sense, like I always, we talked about this. I always thought I was like this super self-aware person. Like I'm like fully aware of everything around me and very self-aware. And then like Mallory's like, you eat like a beast. Like, look at you. You're I'm
like, you make me sound awful. No.
You're like, first off, that's racist. Second,
what are you talking about? Like,
with his beard corn just hanging.
I think of Beauty and the Beast. Like that scene where like it's like dripping off his beard.
No, it's genuinely, that's the image I had all the time.
That's the title.
I'm not even kidding.
The...
He would just like dump his face in like a popcorn bowl or a soup bowl and come up and look at me like, what?
What are you talking about? Right?
But you come to find out, well, yeah, I mean, And the funny thing is like, but it was like one of those things where it wasn't like, it was just like, oh, I always thought that I was, you know, like better about this, or, you know, it's like, yeah. It's that, I mean, that's just the reality of life. You know, like you go through life, you don't really get a chance to really see yourself. And sometimes, and especially the older you get, you know, I was 35 when I got married, 34.
Yeah. 34.
I was 34. I'd just been doing life on my own, doing whatever the hell I wanted, and no real accountability to anybody. And that's a dumb thing, like popcorn in the face. Although at the same time, it's like,
yeah,
you know, like even like leaving the movie theater, and I would just leave the popcorn all over the place. And I was like, isn't that just what you do? You just make a mess and like leave it for the people who clean. And, you know, Mallory's like picking up the stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like those little things, like, hey, just like be courteous. People, things around you. I'm like, yeah, I'm down for that. You know, to like, you know, that's like a small thing, you know, yeah. To like, even like learning how to argue, which, you know, mm-hmm. we're still figuring out.
Yo, same here.
How long have you guys been married?
3 years.
We'll be four years in May.
Four in May. But yeah, so tomorrow, actually, just to get real vulnerable with the podcast, but tomorrow we have our first couples counseling.
Yeah, we're going to couples counseling.
We're going to couples counseling. And, like, I'm actually, like, much more comfortable saying that because I'm like, I want people to know that, like, it's okay. And, like, our marriage isn't, I'm always worried that people are going to be like, are y'all okay, though? And I'm like, yes, we're totally fine.
That's why we're going.
We both need help with learning how to argue and have conversations that honor each other instead of just like yell and scream and like explode at each other and then kind of just like figure out how to resolve it later. You know, like, it's like, how do I want better skills in that. And I know that if I just keep leaving it to us, we might not get there because we're so angry in those moments that like we might not get to practice that. Like, I want someone to teach me that. And so,
We definitely need some kind of system or some sort of indicator or some sort of tools just to figure out how to do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so real. Like, you learn self-awareness in little things and then self-awareness in like the big stuff. You're like, oh my gosh, I am so freaking
normally
broken.
I'm joking. I love it.
No, it's true though. It's very true.
Yeah,
I think it's awesome that you guys are doing that.
Yeah. So we highly encourage anyone who might need a little bit of help later, or
if you need a push, go.
Yeah, or go. Just go. I mean, yeah.
Any couple, honestly. I think any couple could benefit at any time.
Yeah.
Because it's two separate people. It's two individuals living a life together, and that no matter what is going to be hard, you know?
Well, and I think there's this idea, especially as Catholics, that when you get married, like the grace will carry you all the way through certain things. And though there is 100% actual real marital grace that you totally receive doing so many things,
absolutely,
that doesn't fix necessarily your mental stability or even like behavior that you have.
And
or
the wounds and patterns that you've grown with, like, behavioral patterns that you've grown up with and all that stuff. And grace is totally real,
but you think like naturally, as soon as you get married, all that's going to be okay. And you're going to be like, not necessarily quote unquote perfect people, but like your marriage is going to be fine. And like, we're going to figure it out along the way. Cause God and we trust, which is true, but not to the extent that you might need actually help with.
Right. But even, I mean, not even just within marriage. I think that's just like a concept in Catholicism in general, where like, just pray about it, you know, or like Christianity in general. Like, you just got to pray about it. Like, pray through it and you'll be fine. And like, just go and do a holy hour and be a better disciple. And like, you're going to get through it. And it's like, no one talks about how sometimes you even that won't get you through it. Like, there's literal pain and wounds and stuff that is inside of you that needs to get talked about
processed.
And like processed.
Yeah,
I agree. And I also feel like God's given us the gifts of counselors and things like that to help, you know, and it's important. Why not utilize those resources?
Yep.
Yeah. 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 For sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like we're barely a year. We're going to be a year in a few weeks.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
So baby.
That, we always have our guests around their anniversary.
I know.
Like
this
within
is,
a couple weeks
really
or so.
This is really weird. This
that's
is
so
the third
funny.
Couple. Y'all are the third people.
That is weird.
And I've watched the seasons from my friends. I've kind of felt like in a holding pattern, you know. Everyone else was getting married and having babies and going through all those seasons. And I was just kind of doing my own single thing. Now that we've jumped into it, you know, now a lot of our friends are like, kind of like coming clean about their own struggles, or, you know, a lot of our friends are having, or, you know, like, you know, going through divorces, you know, and going through separations.
Different seasons in their marriage, you know?
Yeah. So, and a lot of that's because we're older. And so, you know, that's just how it goes. And so, but it is actually, it's sobering, I guess, you know, like when we think about this, like, it was definitely God's timing. I wasn't ready at 25, you know, like, me personally, I was not ready at 25.
Right.
Wasn't ready at 21. Wasn't ready at 28. You know, wasn't ready at 30. You know, I just wasn't.
Or 31.
Or 31. Or 33. Yeah, barely 30. You know what I'm saying? But like, no, I really wasn't. You know, and so you know, the timing was perfect for. I think the timing was right for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for myself, like I was patient and. I actually, when people said, well, you just know, I actually, as much as I was like, well, that's BS, I did really like try to, that really resonated with me because I'm like, well, you know, that makes sense. Like, it has to be a thing where I'm like, I know, no. Like, I have to be able to look at this person like, oh, yeah, rest of my life, hell yeah, I'm down, you know?
Yeah.
And I just was like, I'm not going to force this, you know, like if it's not there, it's just not there, and keep it moving, keep it grooving until it is there, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, seeing our, you know, other friends, you know, other people who we care about struggle, you know, as they're vulnerable with us or they're just, you know, whatever, it is a sobering thing to know, like, this is not like, you know, sugar plums and rainbows, you know, like this is some hard ass work,
right?
Yeah.
It's hard work, and we feel blessed because we feel it's been a good year, you know, but like
it's just definitely a vocation.
Okay,
so we've got about like 15-ish minutes left, and I kind of want to shift the conversation to something specific. Because I think us two were somewhat of an anomaly in the Catholic Church in being interracial couples.
Oh, I didn't know you were going there. Okay.
No, because I've wanted to talk to both Mallory and Ike about this because we have a lot of friends that are both not ethnic. They're both, like, almost all of our friends are white couples.
Right, right.
And it's been interesting as a Catholic, as a white person, to learn a completely different culture that I thought I was aware of. I have thoroughly enjoyed not only learning how you pray, not only how you like live your faith, but also how you live your life. And I wanted us to talk about that because not only did I see Mallory rocking all of the Nigerian dresses, she was killing it.
Yeah,
I was like, all right, okay. Like all the photos, she's like, hey, I'm like, okay. I know Ike is really outspoken. I feel the same way of like certain racial issues that like we need to talk about as Catholics, and I think interracial couples, I think we should talk about
that.
I love that you brought that up, and that hearing what you just said, Daniel, like, almost brings tears to my eyes, because before meeting Ike, like, I genuinely thought I was a woke person.
Yo, same here. Until I had a brown daughter, I was like, I didn't realize how woke I wasn't, honestly.
Exactly. Legit. Same with Ike. And it was like, oh my God, whoa. Yeah. I was sleeping. I was, you know, and it took me some time. It's different. I think understanding a culture truly and how that fits into being Catholic, you know, that's been a huge learning curve for me. But so I can relate to that totally.
Yeah, for sure. And learning how learning how white people do stuff too.
We don't do anything. Don't act like we do anything.
Oh, y'all do weird stuff too, okay? Like, okay, y'all have a like a subculture within your culture too, yeah, of whiteness. It's so funny. Anyway, but Ike was gonna say something. I just wanted to point that out, everybody. White people are weird too.
I wasn't saying y'all were weird.
It's like different. Like, yeah, y'all have you learning my culture, I'm learning yours as well, because it's like
white people don't have a culture.
Well, yeah, I know. But like I'm learning the white stuff too.
I was this is just a funny thing, but I was there's this video that just resurfaced from the Oprah show.
Oh yeah. Oprah.
And she had this woman who won this cooking contest, won $1 million for her world famous chicken recipe.
Okay.
And
salt and pepperoni.
So she goes on Oprah. Literally, Oprah is eating this food. And she's like, "Oh, I hope you like it." And Oprah's just like, "It's like, please say you like it." She's like, "Well, it's good, but I'm wondering, could we have seasoned this at all? A little salt or pepper?" And the lady was like, "Oh, there's no salt or pepper on it." I'm like, "Oh, Lord." Oh. And Oprah's face was like, It's good. And the lady was so sad. I'm like, but like, you have to understand, like, that's a hilarious thing. You
that's
know, like,
thing,
black people take chicken seasoning. Yo. Very, very. And the funny thing is, I wander into
Ike cooks now.
Nice.
Well, I've also seen Ike's Insta stories of Mallory in the kitchen, which crack me up.
Your, like, creeper posts, whenever you're, like, so creeping on my wife, are my favorite ones. So funny.
She tried to put so many vegetables in one pot the other day, or, like, one pan, and I was like, they're not going to fit. And I was watching with Ike, like, Ike was, like, shaking his head, and I was like, they're not going to fit.
Half the time I don't even know these posts. I hear about them from other people. So like right now, I didn't know
hilarious.
That was a thing.
Hilarious! Wow.
I mean, Mallory just got an Instagram like a month ago.
I got it so I can see what he's putting out there of me.
That's amazing.
That's so good.
Yeah, it's been nice. I think ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
But I think what's been cool is I really do feel. Like I don't feel alone, you know, and with my wife, you know, like when it comes to like racial, you know, stuff, you know, like especially, you know, if you follow me on any, you know, whatever social media, especially Twitter or whatever, I am pretty outspoken and pretty vocal about racism. It's something that I've cared about for almost as long as I could remember. Absolutely. Even when I was a younger person, because I saw the struggles with it, growing up in my hometown in Missouri, in Columbia, Missouri, and seeing my parents struggle with it, and and then like learning about the history of white supremacy in our country, and Mallory does not shy away from this, which is, you know, huge. She's not like she.
I'll be
like,
honest though, it took some internal battle initially to get out of my comfort zones for sure, and. Except that, like, I remember the first day that he was in a Facebook battle, and that's so anti what I am. I rarely even am on Facebook, or like he said, I just barely got Instagram. It's just not really my thing. And, especially like posting in support of him and like knowing that I'm even going to have like family calling me up and being like, what was that? You know, It took a little bit of internal battle, but I remember deciding, like, I'm just going to stand by him.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to understand him and understand where he stands. And so that was really, but anyways, it was, I will be honest and say that it really was hard.
Yeah.
Came through on a Facebook battle once. She like chimed in and, she doesn't post ever, you know, like, and Facebook is a cesspool, but I don't think I post anything controversial. It's just, I think you should care about racism.
Yeah.
And it's like, some people just would get very angry about me wanting to care about racism. So she came through with a post. Just like, and I was like, okay, my wife.
Wifey, my boo.
I think my sister was the same way. Cause my sister's like ride or die. You know, anytime I'm like having a battle on any social media, she just comes through and she's like, well, it's just, you know.
Excuse me
here,
Richard. Let me tell you.
It's so real though. Yeah.
It is. It is a cultural exchange.
Yeah.
And I think being an interracial couple is hard. Like, it's a hard, it's not an easy.
Yeah.
It isn't easy.
No.
You know, like, there's a lot of things you have to learn about each other already as people on, like, very different cultural experiences.
Right.
It's not easy, you know?
Yeah, and normally when you think of, like, an interracial couple's struggle, that's normally, you normally think of from it on the outside of, like, people looking in and, like, judging you, like, well, why are you with someone you're not not in your own race?
Which we've had that, of course, that's not...
But it's also normally been from your culture looking at me.
Yeah, that's been the crazy
like, that's been the crazy thing. Well, granted, I'm also, like, a tall, chubby-ish white dude with a bright red beard standing in, like, the middle of Mexico. They're like, oh, yeah, gringo over here. Yeah. Married to...
But remember, like, on our honeymoon when that... when the guy tried to, like,
hit on you?
No, he tried to sell you something for, like, like double or triple the price. And, like, he was trying to, like,
the thing, like, is when we did a cruise for our honeymoon.
We went to Mexico.
And, like, a Mexican, like, on the Mexican shore. And, like, right. we just, like, dipped everything and just, like, went into town.
We went into the city. I was like, we're not doing the tourist, like, thing. No, I was like, you're with me. Like, we're going into the city and, like, downtown. And everyone told us not to. But I was like, who cares? These are my people. Like, I know these people. And so then there's a point where we separated in the store. And, like, I went one direction, you went the other, and the guy saw you and spotted you and was like, hey, like, I can sell you this for, like, it's like $100 or whatever. And I hear him trying to talk to him in English and telling him how much it is. And then, like, I come in with Spanish and I was like, no. Esto no cuesta, or whatever. Like, I start talking to him and he's like, ah, paisana. Like, he starts, like, talking to me like, you're one of us. And I was like, yes, and he's my husband. And, like, he was like, oh, okay, you're good. Like, I'll give it to you for, like, the real price. I was like, why are you trying to hustle him? Like, this is awful. Y'all are bad, too. I was like,
That's hilarious.
But it was definitely, a really eye-opening, I think, at the very beginning, where we were just like, you're white. Like, I never, and I had never dated, all my previous boyfriends were Hispanic. So, like, I had never noticed those differences in, like, stares or differences in, like, comments or even how they treat you, like, I don't think I've felt that so far. I mean,
well, okay, so what I was getting at is I think the biggest struggle, at least for us now, because I think for the most part a lot of people are like, okay, they're going to be interracial couples, like, it's going to happen, but it's, I think the biggest struggle, at least for us sometimes, is to learn each other's culture. Because, there's so many things. I lost my point there, but, like, there's so many things that I'm still learning about Mexican culture. And Mallory's still probably learning about Nigerian culture.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
But, like, the tight-knitness of the extended family. And how, like, you still don't understand, why do I have to call everyone in my family all the time?
Well, yes, like, but it's also, like...
I do.
And I think Mallory can probably speak to this too. Like, where, like, you grow up essentially in white America because that's basically what it unfortunately is. And then, like, you fall in love with somebody who isn't from that culture, quote unquote. And then you realize, like, holy shit. Like, the person I love has been underserved or has been given so many things and, like, that like, that don't cater to, like, who they are as a person, which I think I love your latest album because of all of, like, your table, like, all of that. Cause I'm like, fuck that. They're like, these, like, they, like screw these people for, like, not allowing, like, Ike to, like, be welcomed into the church. Like, like, why do you have all these white statues? I mean, I know why, like, the whole thing, but, like, it's just so annoying, you know? I can get on my soapbox, too, if you want. Like. I got you back.
It's frustrating, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think we think about, because we want to have, you know, we want to have kids. And I've been an uncle, a very proud uncle, for 6 years now. And I love my nieces and my nephew to death. You know, and I, you know, I think about them and the insecurities that I had to face. As a, you know, small, you know, young black kid in a very white, in very white surroundings. And it wasn't even, it didn't even have to be overt things. It was just, you know, like, white culture is American culture. And very few people think about who's left on the outside. And the damage that does, you know, when someone.
And that's even within the Catholicism too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I grew up Catholic, you know, and. Going to, you know, like, that was, it was a very, you know, kind of white experience, you know, and, you know, we stuck out like sore thumbs and, you know, there's white Jesus everywhere. And it just, you just get the sense that you really are on the outside. It's not like anybody was, I mean, we did have that, but it wasn't even about overt racism towards us by an individual. Mm-hmm, it was just the fact that the setup, the framework was already designed
for you.
Not for me. You know, so, you know, look at the little, you know, like I look at, you know, hope, you know, hopefully our future kids or like our, you know, like my nieces and I don't want them to ever feel that or feel, you know, there's times where I hated my skin and I was ashamed of my culture, you know, cause I was, you know, cause it was, it didn't fit anywhere. You know, people just want to fit in and just want to like be welcomed and feel a part of something, you know, and,
Something that stuck out to me was, I'm going to need your help remembering exactly what happened, but we were at Mass once and a priest, which I don't literally don't want to say anything negative about priests because I think they just need all our prayers in the world. You know, it's really,
I'll say the negative things.
And it's easy to judge. But so he had good intentions, but, this was, I think to me an experience that I never would have thought twice. Because I'm white and I like was really bothered by it when he explained it to me. And then thinking of having children that will be biracial, it was very, very eye opening. But he was talking about, the priest was talking about, what was it?
He was talking about our glorified bodies, you know, like end of time, glorified body type thing. Right. And he was like, imagine like, what's that going to look like? And this is a Vietnamese priest. He's like, you know, like I hope, and he said, you know, like, I hope my glorified body, or imagine my glorified body with, you know, blonde hair and, like, blue.
He's like, for me, you know, I'll have blonde hair and blue eyes. And that was his version of a glorified body, you know? And it didn't even dawn on me anything.
And instantly my, like, butt cheeks, you know, like, quiver. You know? So I'm like, I thought about.
What message does that send to a little black
I thought about the, even, you like, know? The young little. You know, the little Vietnamese girl, this guy was Vietnamese. I thought about the biracial girl. I thought boy or girl. I thought about the Hispanic boy or girl. You know what I'm saying? Like,
You looked really weird with, you would look really weird with blonde hair and blue eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, look disgusting.
I don't know how glorious that would be.
No, that would not be glorious. My I see my glorious. No, my glorified body is basically Michael B. Jordan. That's what my glorified body would be.
I love
you know what
it. Man?
So would mine be like Mark Wahlberg or something? Or like John Cena?
You can do better than Mark Wahlberg. Come on.
Justin Timberlake would be a great one. But
okay, there you go.
Exactly. I see the salary. Now you're good with me.
But okay, keep going.
Yeah. But
I was
just
like,
things like that I think I... Like I said, I just didn't, it wouldn't have dawned on me.
I don't think this priest, he doesn't mean harm, but here, this is not even coming from, and this is the thing about, and you know, I'm going to get a little militant, but like white supremacy, especially that permeates within our culture and outside, you know, this guy was he's from Vietnam, but there's already this like beauty standard that they're, you know, like the standard is lighter skin, you know, like this type of hair, and it's this white standard.
Right.
And that is a very dangerous thing.
Right.
And for this priest who's older, he's a Monsignor, for him to say that and maybe even believe that and think that, like, you know, like that's a dangerous place to be. He might have just said that in passing and maybe just, you know, gets lost in translation. But I do know that this is a problem that we have, not just in America, but like all over the world. It's, you know, and so so if you have that mentality already, you're already an enemy to yourself. And, you know, like white supremacy is perpetrated not just by white people, but like
by all sorts of people.
Yeah, it's been ingrained. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, and I told Mallory this fairly recently, but I was already so sensitive to like racism and racial things. I remember thinking, you know, like I see that white people have it easier. And I believed in a fair God. So I thought that at some point in my life, I would get to be white. So I would get to have it easier. And that's like, you know, that's
heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. It is. You know, like I don't think my parents knew enough because they're from Nigeria. You know, they come from this, you know, obviously there weren't any white people around, you know, like it was just a you know, so they didn't really have to deal with that kind of, yeah. You know, they didn't have to deal with that, you know, overt, you know, I'm sure they did, but like, you know, they were surrounded by and lifted up by other, by people. So like, you know, having kids in the States, I don't know if they realized that they had to say like, hey, just so you know, your skin tone, because that was a thing, even, I mean, in black culture, it's like,
yeah, the lighter,
the better, you know, like, oh, you're getting a little dark, you know, like that is like a thing.
Yeah.
It's
like, it's seeped in, and like, we just have to kind of fight, and just be cognizant of it, you know?
It's so real. Even, yeah. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Even when we got married too, I still remember having conversations, and my mom never listens to the podcast, but so I can talk about my mom. But my mom and like my extended aunts and like my grandmother too, when they met Daniel and like we were engaged and stuff, they were like, "Ay, qué bueno, like so good. Your kids are gonna be white." Like, and I was like, "What? Yeah, like, or they're gonna be like, oh, our race is getting better." You know, like it was always like points on what my children are gonna look like. Oh, good. They're not going to get worse back to our side. And I was like, do you know that you're like we're knocking ourselves down? Like, why are you okay with that?
Right.
I was like, And then Daniel told them like, no, I want a really dark baby.
Oh, I want a dark Mexican glaze kid that plays lacrosse.
And they looked at him like he was crazy. They were like, why? And Dino was like, because he would be beautiful. Like, all of our kids would be beautiful. But, like, I actually want people to look at me and be like, how are you his dad? And be, like, completely shocked by that. And I break those ideas and those, like, thoughts and pictures unfortunately, white racism white supremacy has fed us, even in Latin America, like, even in Mexico, the lighter you are, the better.
Let's just get rid of all white people.
Let's put you out in the sun.
No, okay, wrong way to go.
Yeah, but
that's too good.
But yeah, no, I am definitely somewhat concerned for our children. I don't think I've ever been. I will never say that the Hispanic struggle has ever been the same as the black struggle, like, at all. And I actually think that Daniel was the one that called me out on that once when we were still dating. Yeah. And it was like, I was like, I just don't get why there's so much tension between the black and the white culture when Hispanics have struggled too. And you were like, they owned them. And I was like,
we owned them.
We
never owned,
like,
you.
And I was like, what? Oh my gosh. Yeah. And even I, as a Hispanic, I was like, mind blowing right now. Like, oh my gosh, so many thoughts that I had never had, like, through that conversation. I was like, you're so right. But right now I am so worried with the political state of everything. I'm like, I don't think our president really likes us. And I'm actually concerned for my family right now. And feeling very personally persecuted now. And it's concerning. Like, it's actually concerning. And I can start, again, not saying that it's the same, but empathizing, at least, like, empathizing with the black communities, the black culture, and saying like, yeah, like, this, y'all have felt this. Yeah, yeah. Y'all have felt this so much longer, and we are so there with you. Like, yeah, just supporting, you're not alone. Yeah. You're not alone. So
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, and I think it's like the idea of allyship, you know, and I think every minority in the country has struggled because that's just the way that the
framework
set up. The framework. Yeah. It's the framework, you know.
Marvel framework.
The Marvel framework. Yeah. Don't get me down a Marvel rabbit hole. That'd be bad. But like,
we'll have y'all on again. Trust me.
Yeah. But like, you know, the idea of being an ally, which is no light thing, you know, when, a white person is not saying, well, let me just da 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 or da da da. It's like, no, I hear you and I understand.
Right.
And it's not like, it's not about guilt, you know, it's not about like this big white guilt where you're just like, you should be ashamed of yourself for being white.
Right.
But you know, like, I think my goal when I'm like posting things, it's like, I'm not trying to like make you like
feel bad.
I just want you to listen.
Yeah.
And like, in order to dismantle some of these things, we have to be honest. Like, I think America's very bad at being honest with ourselves about our past, you know? And the first time I ever went to New Zealand for a festival, and not to say that they do it perfectly by any means, I mean, whatever, but I did see this and I thought it was cool. The indigenous people, the Maori people, and I could be wrong about this, but I think this is true. You have to take Maori, like you have to take the language, the indigenous language, as an elective. Like it's like, you know, like which is a cool thing. You know, we don't even acknowledge that the fact that this land belonged to a people before who have been displaced, and now they're on the shittiest parts of the country, you know, as a consolation prize. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like it's those things like people's like, don't talk about that. You know, like just want to turn away. It's like, I'm like, lean into this. And I know it's awkward and it's painful, but you got to hear it. We got to embrace it. Because it's on all of us, but especially allies, to help dismantle the constructs that have been built up.
Yeah.
I think every white person should marry a minority.
That's true. I agree with honestly. That.
That's the perspective they need.
What they need is just to be friends. You know, like just meet somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like just listen. Just listen.
And listen to understand too, because I also know, like, I've heard the whole argument, because again, like growing up in Las Cruces, like I was one of three white girls at my school, you know?
Yeah.
But that isn't being a minority, because if I walk into a store, I'm still going to have preference, you know, people aren't going to follow me around.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it's like to be a minority, because I'm not. So
that's so funny. Well, not that. That's not funny. Right. And more so if I was the only white person on my step team, and I know exactly how you feel on it.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. So it's like, you hear that perspective too. Like, well, we know, you know, I was like, no, it's not the same.
No.
Like, no matter where Ike goes, that is a constant thing in his life. Mm-hmm. Him being black affects how people react to him always, all the time. And I don't experience that.
He doesn't. You know? You don't have to worry about getting in your car and being pulled over by a cop.
Nope.
And like, like,
or like, we can find you behind the stage on at a Steubenville conference. We can't really do that with ICE.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, what?
Yep,
that's
that's
racist.
There we go. There we go. There it is. That's what I'm going to name the title of the episode. Daniel, that's racist.
Daniel, that's racist.
So real. But yeah,
that'd be telling.
Anyway. Well, and going back to the ally thing too, I think I've learned a lot being married to you as well. Like, I thought I knew stuff being a minority, but like, you've taught me a lot too. And one of them was
so ironic.
I know, right? It's so crazy. But I think it's because you have immersed yourself in that culture.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You really tried to learn since you were a kid. Like,
yeah.
And I was very comfortable in my very predominantly Hispanic town where there was two white families and one black family, and that was it. And like, that's all I ever experienced. But so you taught me a lot on how, like, the only way things can change is if white people start advocating for the minorities, because when it comes from us, when it comes from the black community, when it comes from the Latino community, when it comes from all of these different communities, it just sounds like blabber. It sounds like yelling. Yeah. It sounds like whining. And that's why people don't take us seriously, especially Black Lives Matter versus the All Lives Matter. I'm like, do you not hear that they're screaming? Like, can we just not acknowledge that Black Lives do matter? Like, can we not just, and so like, it's so frustrating, but you're so right that like, we have to educate allies in the white culture to almost act like spies. No, I'm just kidding. To almost like infiltrate the system and like infiltrate the system and like educate everyone else and be like, you are so, you are so not aware of what's going on.
Have I told you my experience after my baseball team found out that I was on the step team?
Yes, I think you have told me that story.
So maybe, I don't know if this fits with kind of what you're saying, but I'll tell the story anyway. So, I went to a semi-rural, well, more like, it was like mixed, school in North Austin. And, I played basketball and baseball, and they were both in the same locker room. And the first pep rally we had was where the step team debuted, and two of my best friends were on the step team, and they were trying to get me on it the entire time I was in middle school. And I saw them perform. I was like, yo, I need to be there. Mm-hmm. All my friends were like, Daniel, you need to go on that. I was like, deal. Okay. So I went on I talked to my friends. They let me on the step team. And this all is all leading up to like me performing for the first time in front of like 5,000 attended school, 5,000 high schoolers. And I go back into, I think it's like the next day, I go into my locker room and one of the seniors walks up. I forgot his, I think his last name was Richter. I forgot. But he walks over, he goes, "Come here, Daniel. Come here, Glaze." He's like, "You're on the step team?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "So you're an N-word lover?" And I looked at him, I was like, "You're damn right I am."
Yeah.
And he threw me in the locker and started punching me. Yeah. And, yeah. And I'll never forget, like, that's one of the first moments I was like, screw these people.
Yeah.
And for like the rest of the year, like four seniors just called me the N-word lover so many times, like when they were in their FFA meetings and I'd walk out and like walk by them because I had like a class to do. Legit. I'm not even joking.
That's perfect.
For real. And like just in class, like they would like, not class, but like in practice, they would like purposely like hit balls my way harder than other people. And like throw balls at me and stuff. Like it's a legit thing. And the moment you become an ally is the moment that people freak the hell out for some reason. Yeah. It's so annoying.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. It's funny too. Cause, and you know, like when I, you know, grew up in a smaller town, it was a college town, it was a smaller town in Missouri. And there was a moment, I feel like I remember, you almost felt like you had to choose, you know, like, and it felt like almost like I would, like I had this friend, I don't remember his name, but I won't say it anyway.
Yeah, way to go, Dino. You name drop that guy.
Oh, no.
Good. Good. He deserves it.
Everyone go face
him,
stalk
him. This guy wasn't, I mean, like, seriously, we were friends. Like, in middle school, we were friends because we were both nerds. And we both loved, like, Mortal Kombat and whatever. And we would, like, read these books together and just be nerds together. Well, he was from that part of town, not just, like, white part of town, but like white FFA hick type, you know, like whatever. And but all of the people that he was around and grew up with, like that was like their thing, you know. And I'm black, but we're just friends. And I remember thinking, Tim's like, "Hey man, like, are you gonna start wearing like Wranglers and like muddy boots and like whatever?" And like, don't do that. He's like, "No, I never will." And it wasn't because I was like trying to be like, you know, I hate that stuff, which it was more like, I just don't want to lose you as a friend, because as soon as that happens, it's like a line is drawn. And literally, like, as the year went on, you know, like there would be like, it would get more, he would like part his hair on one side. And then one day he came in wearing Wranglers and I was like, I saw the transformation. And I'm
because I part my hair. Okay.
Then it was the middle part though. You had to do middle part.
No. Nick Carter. There we go.
Nick Carter.
Yeah. Back in my day, back then, if you were down, you were doing the middle part. Yeah. If you were not down, you were doing the side part. Now it's no one does it. Anyway, so he just kind of slowly started changing his dress, and then I felt him drift a little bit, and then the next year, literally did not say a one. We didn't talk to each other because he was fully immersed in that experience of whiteness, which was. You know, those guys were really, you know, like more than anything, they were like more overt about their disdain for anything that wasn't white, you know. And so they all lived out, you know, in the sticks and, you know, whatever, wore muddy boots and Wranglers and, you know, trucker hats and the whole deal. And that was their, you know, whatever, that was their thing. And I just remember thinking how sad it was that I, you know, lost a friend just because, and I'm sure he had pressure from the people he was around. Family, who knows? And it was sad for me because all I wanted to do is, you know, read Mortal Kombat books with this guy.
Man.
You know, so it's a hard thing, man. Like, and you know, I've got called the N-word countless times and gotten fights over them and over that word. And you know, it's just there's a level of trauma that it's hard to articulate. And then you think. Sometimes I think I was like, oh, it's not there anymore, you know, like living in Arizona and immersed in ministry. And I think it was just because I just didn't, you know, like it was just, you get tired.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the idea of the concept of an ally is we, you know, people of color need help carrying this burden because it gets tiring. Yeah. You know, I go through moments where I'm not posting anything on Facebook or on Twitter. And it's not because. It's not because like, ooh, Ike's maybe calmed down and changed his view. It's like, I'm just tired, man.
Yeah.
I'm tired of getting my heart broken, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then I'll come back with some fire and some heat, you know, like, and then I'll take a break. And me and my sister talk about it. It's this kind of self-care thing where you just got to like, as a brown person, you know, like sometimes like, if you're super, super active, you know, like an activist or whatever. And, you know, like, I do believe that even like social media activism is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's tiring. It can be tiring, especially when you're living your life. And I'd leave my house thinking, you know, like, you know, what, where are the cops at? You know, like, I saw them this and doing that. And it's just like, it's tiring when you, when you're living in that kind of cycle the whole time. And so the idea of being an ally, is important. And it's really beautiful when, you know, like in an interracial couple, cause I know, like, you know, being black my whole life and Nigerian, I've seen it all, dated several different types of, you know, people, like different races. And, you know, like it's hard. Like, I know Mallory gets like glares, you know, from black women, you know, like, you know, and like, for me, that's, you know, like that's just kind of how it is how it is, you know, like, and it's hard. So it's like, you're kind of getting buffeted on so many levels as an interracial couple. But I think that's within your unit, it's nice to be, it's nice to feel seen and heard. And, you know, I think a lot of times too, like, I mean, we don't spend our time, I don't spend my time pontificating to Mallory about racism.
No,
you know, we're trying to enjoy each other, you know, at the same time we do, like, she knows, and we do talk, and she's it's not about support. She just hears, and she's an she's an automatic ally.
Right.
You know, talk about wanting the best for our, you know, for our kids who will be biracial, but we don't call President Obama our first biracial president.
Yeah.
We call him our first black president, you know? Like, and so, like, that's, there's a responsibility. We talk about that, you know, a lot, you know, responsibility about being a parent, but responsibility, like, Daniel has a responsibility to, you know, to Lily.
To Lily?
To your kid. Your kid.
Your child. You have responsibility. I just, you know, it's awkward when you get the name wrong, when you get names wrong.
To Lawrence. To Lawrence. To Andrew.
Our priest, priest called her Penelope the other day. I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like,
first off, that's not even a flower.
Not even close.
Not even close. Oh, man.
But yeah, there's responsibility as a white father to a brown child. Say, you know, Mallory will have that same. And that's huge, man. It's huge because already we're having a really, you got, I mean, as a parent, you guys know, like, you're such a huge responsibility to your child, just being your child. But then like, there's this other factor that is very important, you know, and I feel so lucky because I really do feel like I'm with a woman who understands that.
Yeah.
And is, she's my partner, and we get each other, you know, and I trust her implicitly, you know, with our future ghost children.
Yeah.
Oh. We don't, hopefully.
Yeah.
Keep talking about kids like we have kids.
I have so many thoughts.
Well, I was going to say, I have a lot of thoughts too, and I don't necessarily want to make the podcast 4 hours long, because I know we can make it 4 hours long. So why don't we stop it here, but let's plan on legitimately scheduling another time with them, because there's like 4 or 5 other things that I think we could really dive into. Because I do want to talk Marvel, but I also want to talk like outside, like outside of the societal racism, like, or just like racial topics, like, how is it in the faith? Like, just dive into that a little bit more.
The Catholicism,
And just a few other things that I think would be awesome to talk about on another episode.
Yeah.
But with that being said, I do want to say thank you to the Indolos.
I know. I want to keep talking.
I know. I do too. But we got to keep it semi-structured.
Like, I don't want to hang out.
We'll keep talking to them after we're done recording.
Yeah.
But we want to say thank you to the Indolos. We want to say thank you to Nathan, our editor.
And Elizabeth, our podcast producer.
Who's always kills it. They both kill She's it so amazing. Well. Where can they find either of you, both of you, on the internets, Indolos?
You can find my wife on Instagram.
Yo,
Mallory Indolo.
Yes.
That's where she at. You can find me on Instagram at Ike Indolo, and all the socials will probably just be Ike Indolo, IkeIndolo.com, blah 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 blah.
Deal.
Follow me on Twitter if you want to see me let my hair down.
And his hair used to really flow.
It used to really be down.
And of course, all of those will be linked in the show notes. And follow us on Instagram too, @isineffect.
Cool.
We'll hear, you'll hear us on Monday?
Yeah. Say hello, my friends.
Deuces.
Deuces.
I'm keeping that part of there.